All right, let's jump into another deep dive. Imagine this, you're selling something online, like a vintage record player, and boom, you get a response. Awesome, right? But then, crickets. Days, maybe even weeks go by. No follow-up. You start to wonder, did they lose interest? Can you just sell it to someone else, or are you, like, legally stuck?
That's a really common scenario, and it gets at a really interesting part of contract law, offer revocation. An offer can actually vanish, so to speak, even if the person doesn't say, "Hey, I'm withdrawing my offer." And we see this play out in the case of Hoover Motor Express Co. v. Clements Paper Co.
Okay, so 1949 Tennessee. Hoover Motor Express wants to buy land from Clements Paper Company. Sounds straightforward enough, but something tells me it's going to get messy.
Yeah, your legal spidey senses are spot on. So on November 19th, 1949, Hoover puts forward a written offer. Here's the kicker, though. There's no consideration to keep that offer open, which means it's not an option contract.
Hold on. No money down, no promise to keep the offer on the table. So, like a shaky handshake deal, that's already sending up red flags.
And those red flags are totally warranted. Clements' vice president was actually authorized to accept that very same December, but instead of just sealing the deal, they try to haggle, push for some better terms. Kind of risky when there's no solid commitment from the other side, right?
Oh, yeah, playing hardball with a flimsy offer. This can't end well. What happened next?
Okay, so jump ahead to January 13, 1950. The VP from Clements calls up Hoover to chat about the deal. And get this, Hoover starts to backpedal, saying something like, "We might not want to go through with it," expressing some doubts.
Okay, so did they flat out say, "We're revoking the offer"? Or was it more like, uh-oh, second thoughts?
That's the million-dollar question. There was no straight-up "I revoke," but their language was definitely shaky. Then a week later, Clemens sends over the written acceptance of that original November offer. Talk about bad timing, right?
Whoa, okay, so we've got a questionable offer, a delayed acceptance, and a whole lot of legal gray area. What did the courts do with this mess?
Well, get this. The lower courts actually sided with Clemens. They said there was a valid contract Hoover had to sell. They were laser-makest on the fact that Hoover never explicitly said no.
So they were all about the letter of the law, huh? Like needing that formal, we withdraw the offer statement. Seems pretty rigid.
Yeah, they kind of missed the forest for the trees. But then the Tennessee Supreme Court steps in and they overturn the lower court's decision. They said Hoover's offer was revoked before Clemens could accept.
Now, this is where it gets juicy. How can they revoke an offer they never technically withdrew? Did the Supreme Court just, like, invent a new legal principle?
Not quite. They clarified something called implied revocation. Sometimes you don't need a dramatic "I revoke" scene. Actions or words that show a changed intent are enough, especially if the person receiving the offer, the offeree, picks up on those signals.
Oh, interesting. So Hoover's iffy language on that phone call, plus Clements taking their sweet time to accept. It was like a big flashing sign that the deal was off, right? Like Clemens knew something was up, but tried to accept anyway.
Exactly. The Supreme Court said the lower courts got too hung up on a single missing word and completely overlooked the context.
Okay, that makes sense. But you mentioned earlier that there was no consideration to keep the offer open in the first place. How did that factor into the Supreme Court's decision?
That's a huge point. Consideration is like the backbone of contract law. It's something of value that each party brings to the table. Without it, you're dealing with what's called a gratuitous offer, kind of like promising a friend a ride you're not legally bound.
Oh, I see. So a gratuitous offer is basically a promise, but without any legal teeth. It can vanish before it's accepted.
You got it. Compare that to an option contract where someone actually pays to keep the offer on the table. Think of it like putting a deposit down on a car to reserve it.
Okay, that's a good analogy.
Yeah.
So in Hoover's case, their offer was gratuitous, so they were allowed to back out, even if they didn't say so directly. That wishy-washy phone call basically killed the offer, especially with Clemens dragging their feet to accept.
And there's another layer to this, something called the offeree's knowledge. It's not just what the offeror does, but what the offeree understands. The Supreme Court pointed out that, Clemens' VP probably sensed things were shaky based on his conversations with Hoover and his delayed acceptance.
So was Clements trying to lock the deal in before Hoover could officially back out? That's rough. The law wasn't on their side.
Yep, pretty much. But this case raises another interesting point about those lower courts. They were so fixated on that missing "we revoke the offer" statement. Why were they so obsessed with needing an explicit revocation? So we're talking about implied revocation. What else, besides a hesitant maybe, could signal that an offer is well, off the table.
Yeah, what are some other signs to watch out for?
Implied revocation can be tricky to spot. It really comes down to this. Would a reasonable person, standing in the shoes of the offeree, understand that the offer is dead? It's about looking at the offeror's actions, their words, and the overall context. We often use that reasonable person standard in law, you know.
So no magic words or phrases, just looking at the whole picture. Can you give us some real-world examples to help us understand this?
Sure, absolutely. Let's say you're offering to sell your bike to a friend, but then you turn around and list it online for a much higher price. Your friend sees the listing. A reasonable person would probably figure out that you're not really offering it to them at the original price anymore, right?
Yeah, I definitely think twice about that offer.
Right. And that could be considered implied revocation, even if you never explicitly said, hey, I'm taking back my offer.
That makes sense. What about, what if you offered someone a job, but then you're seen interviewing other candidates? Would that be considered implied revocation?
It could be. I mean, if the applicant sees you interviewing other people or hears that you're still searching for the right person, it's reasonable for them to assume you might be having second thoughts about the offer you gave them.
So implied revocation can take many forms. But the key is whether the person who received the offer reasonably believes that the offeror has, changed their mind. This just highlights how important it is to be super clear when you're making contracts.
100%. If you're the offerer and you're having second thoughts, just withdraw the offer clearly. No need to create confusion. And if you're the offeree, be aware of any hints that things might be changing. And if you're serious about the offer, accept it promptly. Don't wait around.
Great advice. Before we move on, let's rewind back to the beginning of the Hoover case. Clemens tried to negotiate better terms instead of just accepting right away. If they hadn't played hardball and had accepted back in December, would that have made a difference?
That's a really good question. If they had accepted quickly, before Hoover started wavering, they would have had a much stronger argument for a binding contract. Remember, the Supreme Court's decision emphasized that Clemens knew about Hoover's uncertainty before trying to accept. That's a crucial detail.
So timing is everything in contract law. It's not just about sending that acceptance. It's about making sure it gets there before the other party gets cold feet.
Exactly. This case really shows us that contract law isn't just about black and white rules. It's about understanding how offers and acceptances work, how revocations come into play, and what the offer knows. It's like a dance, you know?
Speaking of timing, you mentioned the mailbox rule earlier. Can you remind us how that fits into all of this?
Of course. The mailbox rule basically says that acceptance is valid from the moment it's sent, like when you drop it in the mailbox or hit send on that email. But like any rule in law, there are some exceptions, and Hoover Motor Express highlights a big one.
So if Clemens had put their acceptance in the mail before that phone call, where Hoover got all wishy-washy, would the mailbox rule have saved the deal?
Not necessarily. Remember, the Hoover Motor Express case established that an offer can be revoked if the offeror knows about the offeror's inconsistent actions. So even if Clemens technically accepted first, the fact that they knew Hoover was having second thoughts during that phone call could actually negate their acceptance.
Hold on. So even if their acceptance was already in the mail, knowing that Hoover was about to back out could still ruin the deal. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is kind of wild. The mailbox rule isn't a magical get out of jail free card. It works within the larger framework of offer, acceptance, revocation, and what the offeree knows. The fact that Clemens knew, or most likely knew, that Hoover was planning to revoke the offer would be a huge obstacle in proving that they had a legally binding contract.
So even with the mailbox rule on their side, Clemens was in a tough spot. Their delay and their knowledge of Hoover's uncertainty really weakened their position. And this case is definitely making us think.
It is. It really emphasizes that contract law isn't just about memorizing rules. It's about applying those rules to messy real-world situations and understanding how different legal concepts and specific facts can interact. It's about, you know, seeing the law in action.
Speaking of seeing the law in action, let's turn our attention back to those lower courts. They seemed really hung up on that missing "we revoke the offer" statement. Why were they so focused on the need for an explicit revocation?
That's an excellent question, and it really gets at the heart of legal interpretation. We'll dig into that right after. No break this time. Let's just keep going.
Okay, so back to those lower courts. They seemed really stuck on the idea that Hoover needed to say, "We revoke the offer," out loud. Mm-hmm. Why were they so focused on that explicit revocation?
Yeah, they were likely working with a more traditional, you know, rigid understanding of revocation. Like they were looking for a clear and unambiguous statement saying, "We're withdrawing the offer," you know, the formal stuff.
So it sounds like they were concentrating too much on the letter of the law and maybe missed the bigger picture of what was happening in the situation.
Exactly. They were so focused on finding a very specific tree that they missed the whole forest. They got fixated on that missing I revoke and didn't really consider all the signs, all the evidence that Hoover was no longer serious about that initial offer.
And that's where the Superior Court's approach was so different.
Right.
They looked at the entire situation, the whole context, instead of getting stuck on one detail.
Right. The Supreme Court was basically saying, hey, let's not get lost in all these word games. They wanted to determine whether the offer was truly revoked based on all the facts, you know, the intent.
So they were saying, let's step back and look at everything, not just get caught up in one little thing.
Yeah. And they stressed the importance of looking at, you know, what the offeror did, how they communicated with the other party, and what the offeree understood about the situation. Revocation doesn't always have to be this formal declaration. It can be implied through actions, words, and all sorts of things that show a change of mind.
That's a really important point. It means that offer revocation isn't always so black and white. The courts really have to examine the specific circumstances of each case.
Absolutely. Hoover Motor Express really shows us that context is so important in contract law. The Supreme Court recognized that being too rigid about revocation could lead to unfair outcomes, you know? Like someone could get stuck with an offer they no longer intended to honor.
It seems like the Hoover Motor Express case was a big step toward modernizing contract law, making it more relevant to what happens in the real world.
For sure. It moved the focus away from a purely formalistic way of thinking and embraced a more, well, more nuanced and contextual understanding of how offers and acceptances work. You know, the law has to be flexible. It has to adapt to the realities of how people interact and express their intent.
So what are the big takeaways from this Hoover Motor Express case, especially for law students or anyone working in the legal field? What should they remember?
It's a good reminder that contract law isn't just about memorizing rules and regulations. It's about understanding the underlying principles, you know, fairness, intent, reasonable expectations. We should always be looking beyond the surface, thinking about the whole context and focusing on what the agreement really means, not just getting hung up on technicalities.
That's a really great point. It sounds like this case has had a lasting impact on how we approach contract law today.
Definitely. And it shows that the law is not static. It's always evolving to keep up with the changing needs of society. You know, it's a living thing.
Well, I think we've really gone deep on Hoover Motor Express Co. v. Clements Paper Co. We've explored offer revocation, the mailbox rule, the importance of the offeree's knowledge, the Supreme Court's rejection of a strict legalistic approach. We've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah, it's been a really great discussion, a really fascinating look at a landmark case. I hope everyone listening has gained a better understanding of just how complex contract law can be and why it's so important to analyze and interpret these concepts carefully.
I'm sure they have. And as always, we encourage everyone to keep learning, to explore other cases, and never stop asking questions. That's what makes the law so fascinating, right? Always something new to discover.
I couldn't agree more. Well, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive into Hoover Motor Express Co. v. Clements Paper Co. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and remember, in contract law, maybe can definitely mean no.